Welcome back, everybody. NHL Fantasy on Ice. Pete, Rob, Nick Alberga from Sportsnet. Guys, we got some great news today. It sounds like the three words we've been waiting for are here. Return to play. Initial thoughts, guys. Great to be here with you.
I'm just excited. I mean, there's not much more that I can even say. Hockey is back. Hopefully. Nicky, give me something more than that.
Yeah, I was just wondering if they're going to do like Zoom calls on the Jumbotron at the Hub City Arenas. That's all I was inquiring about.
So 24 teams, boys. This is like half of March Madness. It could be that crazy. It could be even more, crazy than we've ever seen from this NHL postseason structure. Even more unpredictable. Initial reaction to the matchups, which are now official, and there's this qualifying round where some teams, like we thought, will be in the action. Maybe when they wouldn't have been in previous format.
Well, looking right up at the paper here, Montreal, Pittsburgh, Pete, I think the first thing that comes to mind for me is Carey Price. Anytime I see a playoff series mentioned with the Habs, immediately I think of number 31 on the back end. Obviously, what happened with Pittsburgh last year, Nick, I don't think many people predicted. I know you're kind of an Islanders troll in a way on Twitter, but IRL, like, I don't really think a lot of people thought the Pittsburgh Penguins were going to get swept. So I don't know if this is shades of last year all over again with Carey Price. I think this is a very intriguing matchup, though.
Very intriguing. And, you know, I was ecstatic back on Friday when Sportsnet actually called me and asked me to do some work for the first time in 2 months. And what they asked me to do was comprise sort of a bit of a bio of how these teams were faring, where they were, the 24 playoff teams. And it was just really fascinating when you look at teams like Chicago and Montreal. But, you know, when I was writing these things, I think back to last spring where everything we expect to happen didn't happen, right? The first round, I think by round two, all the top seeds were done. And that's what intrigues me the most about this playoff format and this setting is honestly what we saw last summer, that if you can get hot, you get hot and you can ride all the way. And I know the St. Louis Blues were a fantastic team. I know ultimately Boston was a really, really good team, but never say never for the Arizonas of the world. The Central Division, and we'll get into it, guys, you can make a case for like all those Central Division teams to go far, right? Like Dallas, Nashville, if they can get more than 13 goals, 14 goals from Matt Duchene and Ryan Johansson, there's a lot of questions, but I think I like this format in the sense where anything is possible at this point in time.
One thing I wanted to ask Pete about this matchup specifically, Tristan Jarry emerged, at least in fantasy, as one of the best waiver wire pickups of the season. He kind of took Matt Murray's job from late November, December, January, but then started to falter a bit in February. Matt Murray started to raffle off a couple wins in a row, and then the season stopped. So picking back up in the first round of a qualifying round, who are you starting if you're Pittsburgh?
I think you got to start Matt Murray, who's playing a lot better in the second half of the season. He has the championship pedigree. That said, if Murray has a stinker in game one, Tristan Jarry is getting game two. I think you can bet on that. So that's going to be a storyline all throughout, especially with both of those guys in RFA contract years. But yeah, I think Murray earned it. He bounced back over the second half. Had a great first month of the season, was pretty bad in between, but had some nice continuity going. Continuity, though, I guess you could look at and say, what does it even matter at this point? Because we've had, what, 2 or 3 months between the pause and then potentially when the season could resume, maybe sometime in July. That's not even a certainty. I would go Murray, though, in game one if I was Pittsburgh.
It's going to be interesting to see some of these teams that have like 1A and 1B goalies. Like, is that going to be a new playoff phenomenon moving forward? Or is like this just, you're going to ride out whoever starts game one and you're just going to hope that if they have a bad game, you know, first game, that they're going to move on and keep going back to this guy. And hopefully it happens.
Well, you know, you guys look at the teams that'll be in the playoffs. I mean, there's only a couple teams that have a formidable or legit number one goalie. You can even make the case for like a Washington. What do they do there, right? Ilya Samsonov had a much better second half than Braden Holtby. Boston's going to, you know, lean towards Tuukka Rask, but they know they have Yaroslav Halak. You know, there's a couple guys coming back, like Philip Grubauer in Colorado didn't play much. I think chemistry is going to be a big time factor, having said that some of these guys haven't played in a long period of time. So I think the question marks arise from that sort of the scenario too is the goaltending. I mean, you got to make a pretty gutsy call, right, with the playoff format and going right into the postseason here.
And when you approach this from a betting lens, I mean, I almost feel like I'm gravitating toward the team with the clear starting goalie, a no-nonsense thing like Connor Hellebuck against the Calgary Flames, who have a 1A, 1B. David Riddick is coming off an elbow injury that he's been dealing with. Like, I have no interest in the Flames from a betting lens. Even though the Jets are a lower seed, I think I give them the edge right now. And same could be said for Carey Price, like you said, Rob. I mean, you know who the guy's going to be for him. He's a workhorse. He got his rest during the pause, and he's going to be full guns blazing here.
Look, if you're trying to peg Stanley Cup contenders, again, I think you can make a case for a variety of teams. But I wonder, and I'm always wrong, I'll preface by saying that, if this favors the younger teams in this league, right? Like, you look at the Boston Bruins, there's no doubt in everybody's minds they were a perennial contender again. They go to the Cup final last year to lose to St. Louis, but there's a lot of vets. To restart this quickly under, you know, a stressful period of time, I think, in my opinion at least, I'm going to lean heavily towards a younger team, you know, a team that's up and coming with some juice, some legs, you know, fired up to be there, as opposed to maybe a veteran guy, I'm just saying hypothetically, has to be away from their family. There's a lot of intangibles that we really don't think about when we're coming back this way. But I'm more inclined, and when I make my selection at some point in time over the next couple months, it likely might be a team that nobody suspects, right? Because I think you look at some of these teams that have been there before, you wonder if doubt starts to creep into their minds just a tad too.
I think there's going to be doubt, but more so this year than any other year. I think last year, you can even go back to a year before that. I mean, so much random things happen in the Stanley Cup Finals in hockey in general. So I don't know. I think the more time that goes by, and we're probably still, 2 months away from a game being played, I'm sure my opinion might flip-flop a couple more times. But even after last week's show that we kind of teased this 2014 format, now that it is going to happen, I really still think that teams with veteran guys on it that have battled adversity all throughout the career, I know they're a little bit older, I just think that they have that little insider knowledge. Guys that have been to the Olympics, for example, they have that kind of weird break, that little weird gap in the middle of the season. They know how that's done. So I would still give the edge to the veterans, but always come back with the caveat now in this time that this is the weirdest thing that any one of these guys has had to go through, probably since they were playing peewee hockey. So through a betting lens, I think you'd be pretty crazy or starved to win some cash if you're throwing a lot on one team or another right now.
Well, we know there's going to be a lot of folks that are throwing cash on these games, and they are starved. All sports fans are starved. I just want to tip my cap to the NHL, to the NHLPA, to Bettman, to the folks up on Mahogany Row, because the NHL, we see all the other sports, Major League Baseball, NBA, they're still working through a lot of this stuff. And to just – and listen, we all know that this is not 100% certain – but the fact that they were able to agree on a format, agree on a system that the players, the teams, the clubs agreed to, we have to tip our cap. And listen, it's going to be a bit of a wait. We know this. We might not be playing hockey till late July or August. But the fact that the building blocks were released today are in place, and we could see what the matchups are, and there's intrigue there, and the round robin, and the qualifying round, and working through the lottery, you got to give them credit.
Yeah, definitely, man. They're fully committed to salvaging this season, and that would be for the good of the sport. So that's something that I think we could all respect for sure. As far as the matchups and letting some extra teams in, I think some people could say it's fair, some could say it's unfair, but they let more teams in who were within striking distance, and that will still make this playoff. This playoff is still going to be multiple months long. Everybody's going to have to go through a grueling process and earn their stripes. And I think the winner in the end will be very deserving of one in these extraordinary circumstances.
And the thing that fires me up the most, if you were to talk about these 24 teams, how could you not be excited by the New York Rangers, right? And there's a reason, the method to my madness, why I wore this New York Knicks jersey for you guys that nobody listening will be able to see, but it's a Meta World Peace jersey. I'm just writing the bio for the New York Rangers, just seeing an Igor Shesterkin in the Stanley Cup playoffs, they have to start him, right? Like Artemi Panarin, you know, Mika Zibanejad, the year he was having, that team would be scary to play. And it wasn't a shocker to me that Carolina wanted no piece of the New York Rangers, right? Because you think about teams with absolutely no pressure to contend and win right now, the New York Rangers are one of those teams. And that's you know, funny enough, why I thought teams like Carolina to begin with last summer and last postseason were successful because there was no pressure. When there's no pressure, it's easier to do your thing and just go out there and skate, right? So the New York Rangers, I'm really, really fascinated by that series, boys.
Yeah, I think I really, the more I think about it, they could win multiple rounds because I think there's going to be a serious, from the level of competition that the teams in the qualifying rounds, when they meet a team that got a bye and, you know, played a round robin, I think that some of those lower seeds could catch the higher seed by surprise. And the Rangers and Zibanejad and Panarin could take this team not only out of the qualifying round, but maybe even into an upset in that first round. Beyond that, I don't know what their ceiling is, but I know that they could do that. We've seen enough of that team to know that they could go on a nice stretch like that.
Well, their defense isn't good enough to under normal circumstances, but these aren't normal circumstances. Reality is this. If they play Carolina in the qualifying round and they beat Carolina, they're going to be warm. They're going to be hot. They're going to be firing on all cylinders. That's why they could win two rounds. Otherwise, no way that team with Tony DeAngelo, Adam Fox, and these guys that are trading chances on the blue line would win a playoff round. No way.
I'm just here for the Brady Shea revenge series, guys, right? Because
and is he even going to get a jersey in that series?
I know. And that's the thing, too, with Carolina, right, I think it's asking a lot for teams who – really haven't played together, right? You look at the Canes with Dougie Hamilton, Sammy Vatanen slated to come back. Like, there's a lot of guys returning from injury, and to throw them into the fire of the Stanley Cup playoffs or this rejigged format, whatever we want to call it, play-ins, play-downs, I think is going to be a big ask. And to find that chemistry instantaneously is fascinating to me. That's why, for instance, I love Colorado in the Western Conference, but guys, half their team is coming back. Are they going to be able to find their game before it's too much and they lose four games in a series, right?
Yeah, I wanted to mention something about Colorado. I mean, you look at the favorites right now, they're right up there near the top. I mean, you could really make the argument that no other team is in a better spot now than they would have been before than the Avalanche. When you look at the guys who they're likely going to get back, and then also they're not going to have to play the Dallas Stars in the first round. Yeah. I mean, that's amazing for them for that standpoint.
That's a benefit, no doubt. I mean, Dallas with Ben Bishop hot in the first round and a shutdown D. I don't care. When I was looking at some numbers yesterday, Dallas has scored like the second fewest goals in the league. How did they get where they were? That makes no sense. And to me, honestly, that's why Dallas would be a great cup pick. If I was a betting man, I honestly might go in the way of Dallas because that team found a way to be where they were in the regular season standings without scoring barely more than two goals a game. That's ridiculous.
And especially, I mean, you look at that Dallas roster, and these are the two teams I was zoning in on yesterday, Dallas and the Nashville Predators, right? The personnel on the roster, like, wow, they could do something substantial, and it just wasn't working this year, right? You look at the Preds with UC Saros and Roman Josi, the Norris-type season he was having. And then Dallas, conversely, every, you know, star player on their roster was not playing according to snuff, right? Like Tyler Seguin, Jamie Benn, Alex Radulov. They pick up Joe Pavelski in the free agent contract last summer. That hasn't worked out. You still get that feeling, even though that team's struggling, because these guys have done it so many times in their career, maybe they flip a switch. Maybe they start scoring goals. And then, as you mentioned, Rob, you couple that with Ben Bishop and Anton Khudobin, if Bishop can't do it, and then you're in business, right? Because you look at that back end, spearheaded by Miro Heiskanen and John Klingberg. Dallas is a really, really scary team. And that's why we wondered going into the Stanley Cup playoffs to begin with pre-COVID, the Central Division, would they beat up on each other, or would one team, prevail and go all the way to the Stanley Cup final again?
That's one thing about like the Rangers. Like, what if the scoring stops? What if the power play stops? Mm-hmm. Like, how would the Rangers react to that? How would the Oilers react to that? You know how Dallas would. They would keep winning. They'd keep playing the same style they've been playing all season long with two different coaches. They're accustomed to that. So you guys make some really good points on that. And then to the series that Nick was mentioning with Nashville, I'm actually more inclined to lean towards Arizona because it's another team that's battled through a lot of injury. They have not gotten enough from Phil Kessel, but Kessel has performed in the playoffs before. They have Taylor Hall, who's still in that contract year. Like Arizona, I look at so much differently now that they snuck in, and they have a very winnable first-round matchup against the Predators.
Yeah, that's the thing, too, with hockey players specifically, guys, is confidence, right? And it could be a blessing in disguise for guys like Phil Kessel and Ryan Johansson and Matt Duchene. The list goes on and on. Guys who just weren't happy with the way they were playing, right? You go home, you spend time with family, you just dwell on things, and you look to the future. And next thing you know, maybe they were training, maybe they're doing some stuff at home. They come back, you score in your first game, something first shift, you get that confidence. They have the ability. If they get the confidence, they can take over a series. And that's why, you know, to circle back on your point, Pete and Rob, I just think it's so difficult to pinpoint from a betting stance when you go into these Stanley Cup playoffs.
No doubt. And I was also looking at the New York Islanders, Florida Panthers qualifying round matchup. And that's another one where I kind of look at it. I'm puzzled, absolutely puzzled, because the Islanders, Varlamov started amazing, 14-3-3, then won five games the rest of the season. Not going to cut it. The Islanders as a whole, what 17-game point streak and then nothing, right? So that to me is another one. And you look at the flip side, Florida Panthers. So Sergei Bobrovsky had the second worst save percentage of his entire career this regular season. Meanwhile, Chris Driedger led the league in save percentage. So you look at these two teams, and on paper, you're just zigzagging. Things are going everywhere. It's like a roller coaster ride. One day you think the Islanders have the advantage. The next day, oh, Florida can score. They have the advantage. Well, they can't stop a puck in their own end. So this is like another like 200 IQ scenario that you need to figure out who's got the upper hand in this one matchup.
I think when you look at these qualifying round series, Rob, that is absolutely correct. This is the one that you look at it and you can't decipher really what is going to happen. And the two teams, the goaltending, all the things you just mentioned, real head scratcher for anyone trying to handicap that series, Nick.
I love this too. Anytime we could talk about the Islanders, you realize they haven't won a game since February 23rd. That's right. They'd lost 7 games in a row before COVID hit. Like it hit at the perfect time, I think, for the Islanders. And it's sad to say, but that team was really, really starting to sputter, and they were flailing out of postseason contention really, really quickly. So they'll get a chance. And I think you guys make excellent points, because we've known the Islanders to be, especially under Barry Trotz and the Mitch Korn regime, you know, a stifling defensive team. They had their issues, right, the last couple months, and it wasn't the same Islanders team that we'd been accustomed to seeing. They can't score goals, right? And conversely, it's a really interesting series for many dynamics, but Florida can score, right? Florida can't keep the puck out of the net. But Bobrovsky can get shutouts if they're not going to shoot on him, right? Like the Islanders might be one of the worst offensive teams in this league if you just look at them on paper. They pick up J.G. Pageau. He had, what, 2 goals, both 2 points in 7 games. Like he really didn't fit in there just yet. Anders Lee. Like the Islanders are a fascinating team, but you can also see why they can make some noise. But then I started to wonder too, the crowd, right? There's no crowd. The Islanders, they literally live off their crowd. It's a tough place to play at the Coliseum. You're banging bodies. That fourth line is going to work. It's going to be a different element. And that's the one thing to notice too and think about, boys, going forward in the playoffs, is the element of not having a crowd, how that differs in this day and age of Stanley Cup playoff action too.
That definitely helps Florida. I mean, let's be real. They have no even some of their biggest home games.
They don't have a crowd, Jensen.
Nick, thanks.
But even some of their biggest home games through the years, like they always like fall like on a whimper and like blow the opportunity. I always feel like that happens to the Panthers when they do get a good crowd. So like all that pressure is out of the window. And the coaching matchup couldn't be better from a historical standpoint here between Trotz and Joel Quenneville. I do like Florida in this series. Not by much, though. It's like the age-old debate of, like, can the better defense stop the better offense? So I would lean Florida here, but it's really intriguing, like you guys said.
What do you guys make of the round robin for the high seeds? Like, is there any high seed that you're looking at right now thinking, okay, they're going to come out and just dominate this round robin? Where I'm thinking is, like, these top seeds playing each other, that's disaster waiting to happen. I mean, like, can you imagine Ovi playing 25 minutes in these seeding games? Forget that. You want this guy on the ice for maybe 10 minutes max, and that's 10 minutes of power play time. No even strength shifts. What is the point? If I'm a coach, what is the point of playing my superstar 25 minutes in a seeding matchup? There isn't one.
I believe there's some details to be worked out as far as the round robin seeding. What I would love to see is the team that comes out on top of that round robin, they get to choose their next opponent.
Yes.
And the top two teams like get to choose their next opponent.
I think
that's what the league should do. I don't know if they're going to do that, but I think it makes it a little bit more intriguing, gives them a little bit more motivation to play in those games. Rob, you make up some great points. It's a tricky thing to try to solve because you can't have these teams come in cold. You need them to play. They're going to play against each other in this round robin format. Is the motivation, is the juice worth the squeeze to get that number one overall seed? You know, again, I would like to see that number one team be able to choose their opponent. maybe the top two teams choose their opponent. But we'll see what happens with that.
You know, Bob, there were three words that come to mind when I was listening to Commissioner Bettman speak: competition, tradition, and integrity. And I think while you look at the other major sports, especially the NBA, where there's, you know, different ideas thrown out there about potentially, you know, seating all the teams together, not having conferences, the NHL still wants to keep some semblance of what we've seen before in the history of this league. So I think it does make a lot of sense. Ultimately, at the end of the day, not everybody's going to be happy. Right. And I think we're starting to see that on social media. So I've got no issue with it. I think the Boston Bruins have a bit of a reason to be fired up. They had the President's Trophy pretty much locked up. They were, what, 6 points with a game in hand up on the St. Louis Blues with roughly about 12 games remaining left in this season. So, I mean, every team out there is going to have their issues and their concerns and their unhappy feelings. But, I mean, it is what it is. And you have to adapt and evolve to what's transpiring right now, right?
It's crazy too. I mean, when you think about, like, if they're each playing each other one time, you're telling me, like, if the Philadelphia Flyers win three games in a row, they could be the top seed in the Eastern Conference?
Yeah.
I like that for teams like that who maybe would have been like 15 points behind the leader in the conference. I mean, even for Tampa, it's huge. They would have never caught Boston. They were 8 points behind Boston. Now they have a chance to flip the standings. Not that it would matter in terms of home ice advantage, but maybe you play a little bit more favorable of an opponent.
I did want to bring up the Flyers, Pete. I'm glad you did. I was thinking about Carter Hart when this was announced and kind of the pressure of a 21-year-old netminder versus, you know, a guy like Carey Price. We're not even concerned about. There was all three of us on the panel that mentioned the Habs. There was absolutely zero concern. They had the lowest point percentage in the East, and not one of us had a concern about the Habs. Whereas the Philadelphia Flyers are right there, top dog, one of the top dogs in the East, but they have a 21-year-old netminder. How do you think that fares with him having all this time off where he was kind of at a rhythm? Every home game they started him, he pretty much won.
I worry about the Flyers a little bit, honestly, just because they had so much momentum. They probably had the coach of the year in AV, and now that momentum is gone. So I think, you know, it's going to be a tough road for Carter Hart. I think Hart has the ability to get them there, but with like these different elements, and I just don't know that the fly. Like I saw the Flyers are like more of a, they're have better betting odds or worse betting odds if you're looking for an underdog than the Capitals. Like I just don't understand that. That doesn't make any sense to me. And I think stuff like that will work against the Flyers if the expectations are too high. Mm-hmm. I was on the Flyers from the beginning of the season, but I don't like all that stuff as it pertains to their playoff chances this year.
I totally agree, Pete. You know, you look at teams that maybe the break didn't come at the right time for them. It was probably Philadelphia, right? They were gaining steam. They were vying with Pittsburgh and Washington respectively for the Metro Division crown. And then all this happens, right? And, you know, as much as people don't like to admit it, I do feel like momentum is a bit of part of hockey, especially, and the Flyers were finding their game at the right time. Alain Vigneault was doing a tremendous job, and they got to refine it now, right? And you got to go to battle with teams that have been there before, have played meaningful games. And, you know, I'll note too that young goalies in the last couple of years have had a lot of success in playing in meaningful games, right? They almost say sometimes that it's better that you have no idea what the playoffs are before you go there, right? So I'm going to take sort of that side with Carter Hart. But again, that Flyers team was really, really starting to impress the way they were playing down the stretch there.
I just wanted to bring up two more teams as well and get your guys' opinion on this, because I kind of know how I feel about them, but I want to hear what other people think too. The first team would be the Chicago Blackhawks. It's funny, if you go to NHL.com/standings now, you will see everything sorted by points percentage. They had just a shade above 500 points percentage. I mean, in the Western Conference, consider this, only two teams had above 40 wins, and the Blackhawks barely had above a .500 winning percentage. That is downright dreadful, especially with a team that does have good offense. Their back end has concerns now. So I wanted to ask what we think about Chicago. And then the second team I also want to hear from you guys on is the Minnesota Wild. I know, Bob, you were a fan of them on the show previous to this. I think we can all agree that they were a great fantasy team in the second half of the regular season, but I think that might have been a little bit of a flash in the pan type of moment for them. So I want to toss it to you guys on those two teams.
I'll take the Blackhawks because I know I was touting them a little bit on the previous show. I know Rob was saying last show, like they would have no chance against a team like St. Louis. Like Edmonton is not a team like St. Louis. So they have a much better chance in this scenario.
Yeah.
And one thing I didn't get to mention on the previous show, Corey Crawford has a .917 save percentage this year. Robin Leonard was playing so well for them, then he got traded. Vegas has maybe the best goaltending tandem in the league right now. We'll get to that later. But Chicago was playing well in terms of its goaltending all season long, and they have the stars to tangle with Draisaitl and McDavid and Kane and Taves. So it's like from an offensive lens, and I think they won 2 out of 3 in the regular season series, Chicago. They can play with Edmonton, and I know that.
From the Wild perspective, and yes, I have been on the Wild, I like the Wild as a value pick. And if you look at the Stanley Cup odds, the Wild have better odds than the Jets, the Panthers, the Islanders, the Rangers, the Blue Jackets, the Blackhawks, and the Canadiens. Fiala's playing out of his mind. I like him more than I like the Jets. I like him more than I like the Panthers, the Islanders. I may not like him as much as I like the Rangers and the Blue Jackets, but I like them more than the Habs and the Blackhawks.
Minnesota was intriguing, right? Because there's no doubt what they want to do. They want to retool, they want to rebuild, and then so they fire Bruce Boudreaux, so he can't find a way to make the playoffs, because that's what Bruce Boudreaux does. And then conversely, they go 8-4-0 under Dean Evason, the interim, right? Like, they just did not want to go away, Minnesota. And I was told they're probably going to make the playoffs anyways, but I think you throw a team in the fire like that who have some veterans' prides on the line. They understand this is the last kick of the can altogether with Eric Staal and Spurgeon and Suter on the back end. Zach Parise was almost an Islander. Like, that's a really, really good point, not to mention Kevin Fiala, right? And then you look at Chicago. While a lot of us like the Edmonton Oilers because of the big two they have there, it's just so hard for me to discount a team that has won 3 cups in the last decade, right? I know it's different in terms of the players they have around them, but I think important to note, Patrick Kane was having a good year. Jonathan Taves is having a good year. Can Alex DeBrincat and Dylan Strome find their game again, right? Because DeBrincat, and this normally does happen to a lot of players, he had a bit of a fall off this year after signing a mega contract extension. So you wonder if the time off has helped a guy like him. And I agree with you guys. I think in the second half, Chicago was much better defensively. In the first half, they were letting everything in. Then they found their way just a tad. So I'm with you. I don't know who I'm going to pick at this point in time, but it's the Oilers. So, right?
I would lean to the Oilers there. Chicago, intriguing team. And let's not forget, they fired their CEO during COVID-19 pause. So what does that mean for the coach? What does that mean for the brass of the Blackhawks?
Their CEO has nothing to do with any of that.
Well, I think it does. I think the CEO has a lot to say about the direction of where the team is going. I mean, the GM, Stan Bowman, could be in question. The coach could be in question. Does that work for them or against them? I don't know. I'm just going to base on what I've seen with the Blackhawks throughout the whole season, and it's been garbage, quite frankly. So I'll take Draisaitl, I'll take McDavid, and I'll take Tippett over there in Edmonton over the Blackhawks. I know they've won their Stanley Cups, but that window's closed as far as I'm concerned.
I think Pete said it best, honestly. Edmonton is not St. Louis. And from everything that I've learned from the Edmonton Oilers in recent history is disappointment after disappointment after disappointment. And the same thing I kind of learned with the Minnesota Wild this season. I bet against them so much. We were cherry picking every time the Minnesota Wild had a favorable matchup. We would bet against them early in the season. We kept losing on that team. Now, the thing with Vancouver is I do like Vancouver. You know, I was a big JT Miller guy. That's all well and good. But this Minnesota Wild team, it's really going to be hard to pick against them, especially because Vancouver won a ton of games on the shoulders of Jacob Markstrom. He bailed them out one too many times this season. And I don't know if that's going to carry over after this 3-month hiatus here. So I would have a very hard time betting against Minnesota. But I will say this for Chicago. That one to me is a 50-50 toss-up. I'd love to see McDavid and Draisaitl combine for 5 points on the, you know, in the first period of that game. Is that going to happen? I'm not so sure.
I'll say this. Edmonton, there's a lot of pressure on their shoulders. Chicago's coming in loosey-goosey, nothing to lose. Edmonton, they got the best player in the game. They got Draisaitl. They're in the mix finally. And then they lose to Chicago. They're going into that best-of-5 series with a little pressure on their shoulders. I'll say that.
Yeah, I don't know if we're not giving Edmonton enough credit here. Dave Tippett did a tremendous job. I think health comes into the running as well. I think arrested Connor McDavid's good news. Arrested Leon Draisaitl's good news. We'll see if Darnell Nurse can do something. They addressed their depth a bit, I think, at the deadline too, right? Andreas Athanasiou comes over from Detroit. Tyler Ennis. I understand when you play Chicago and Patrick Kane is an intimidating, you know, figure on the other side. I'm just not crazy with the Hawks. Like, I don't – they're slow. They're not the same team they used to be. And I understand Patrick Kane is, again, there. But I don't know if we're giving Edmonton enough credit, boys.
Well, they did have the best power play and the second best penalty kill. So I agree. That's really hard to do.
Yeah.
And they would be in great position to win in the first round. I mean, if they went ahead and swept the Blackhawks, nobody would be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I mean, I have my worries about – I know Mike Smith has a great save percentage in the playoffs. Was great last year for the Flames. I still have my worries about him. I read between the lines and behind the numbers there. I mean, I that does not give me confidence where at the drop of a hat they'll go to Koskinen, who I also don't have a ton of faith in. So, yeah, Chicago from the goaltending standpoint I think has the slight advantage. For Vancouver, I think Vancouver has one of the best top sixes in the entire league right now with an even higher ceiling. I mean, you look at their right wings, as good as anybody with Toffoli and Besser. Their centers, as good as anybody with Bo Horvat and Elias Pettersson. And then, oh, yeah, JT Miller, maybe the biggest steal in the entire league, Rob called him. So Vancouver, I am very high on. They do have that number one goalie in Markstrom, who's in a contract here. And those guys do have something to play for. Markstrom's playing for a new deal. He's not going to lose that series.
I like that team a lot, Pete. I do worry that they are on the cusp of achieving greatness in the Western Conference, that this is going to be a team that year in and year out, they are top three in division solidified. That is a lock preseason pick for us every single season. I just think that from those teams, it kind of reminds me, you know, when Toronto was building, when Washington got their offensive core, teams that you do look at and you say those are the best top sixes in the league, it took them, you know, a couple years to kind of get that playoff fuel. I don't know if that's why I'm a little – not sour on, but just a little bit worried about Vancouver. I think most of my logic for this just being kind of 50-50 on it is I just lost so much to the Minnesota Wild this season. I really don't want to see that again in the postseason. I think it's more of a personal bias than a, hey, this Vancouver team is flawed. I don't think there's many flaws there, especially with Jay Beagle winning every single defensive zone faceoff in that best of five first round.
Well, Bobby here, he made a lot of money on the Minnesota Wild in a lot of scenarios as underdogs, home underdogs at a very nice price. And I'll say that I'm going to ride that Wild team until they bury me. We've gone this long. We have Nick Alberg on the line. We've gone this long without talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. So I'm going to tee you up, Nick, on the Maple Leafs Blue Jacket series and what you sense. What's the sense in Toronto? You know, Sheldon Keefe, the players, Marner, Matthews, what's your sense, Nick?
Yeah, it wasn't the sexy matchup we expected, right? Everybody was buckling up for Tampa and what was that going to bring with, you know, all the big boys and the Lightning. But Columbus, you better not sleep on that team, right? And we saw this last spring, and granted, I get it. Most of their big guns are now gone elsewhere. But I think when you look at the MO of this team, it hasn't changed, right? John Tortorella knows what he's doing from a defensive point of view. I think you look at notable injury returns. Seth Jones has to be a top there. And I think you look in the top six, Oliver Bjorkstrand, you know, Cam Atkinson's another guy. Like there's a bunch of guys coming back from injury that could make Columbus scary. They can't compete with Toronto offensively. There's no doubt about that. And I think what Columbus will do is sort of play a trap and wait for a mistake from the Maple Leafs. So we all knew this going into the playoffs from the Maple Leafs point of view is could they find a way to buckle up and shore down defensively? And I think they're really going to be tried in terms of their patience against the Columbus Blue Jackets, who are really going to try to grind them down. They did it throughout the season when these two teams hooked up in the regular season. They're going to play physical with them. So I think it's a really intriguing series on paper. I'm probably going to pick Toronto still to win this series, but I think Columbus is going to give them a bit of a run for their money here.
I think this is the best example of any series where you could say the team that should win may not. Like the Maple Leafs should win this series, but I'm inclined to pick the Blue Jackets with all the guys they're getting back from injury. The high-powered offense of Toronto could easily be neutralized by that system that Rob referenced in the previous show that maybe is not the most exciting thing in the world, but in terms of like team chemistry and just going against the odds, even without the home crowd, the Jackets' home crowd is a big factor in those playoff series, but even without that edge, I think that the Jackets have a chance to win this series. Yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, Toronto on paper is so much better.
For all of these qualifying round series, it will be interesting to see what the odds makers, what the lines are for these series and when Vegas releases those lines. Because I look at them, a lot of these series is 50-50. And I think Vegas is going to do the same thing. They don't know how to really judge a five-game series. They don't really know exactly how these teams are going to come back off after the pause. So I think you're going to have some 50-50 line scenarios, toss-ups, and you can probably get some decent value in some spots that you like. But we'll keep an eye on that. When the odds are released, we'll talk about it. Probably over the course of the next 5 days, you'll see those lines.
And I just wanted to go back and talk about the Leafs for a second. I don't think you could find a worse matchup for them right now than the Columbus Blue Jackets, with both Elvis and Corpusalo signing these team-friendly deals, locked up, not having to worry about that in a postseason situation. That stuff is underrated big time when it comes to playing hockey, especially in the summer, when that's normally the signing period. So I think this is very interesting. I would say that Toronto should win here and now. There shouldn't be a question. We shouldn't even be having this debate. But here we are. And I'll just go back to the series against the Capitals in 2017-18, when Columbus didn't have the big dogs. They took that to six games. They were right in that. They were a double OT goal away from forcing that the other way. And the same thing, go back a year previous to that against the Pittsburgh Penguins. I know that that was a five-game series. I think each one of those games was a goal, right? I mean, maybe it didn't count that way with an empty netter. That was the closest series. And I honestly feel like Columbus was robbed in a couple of those games. So don't look at this team and say, this is going to be an easy walk in the park for the Toronto Maple Leafs. My preseason cup pick was the Toronto Maple Leafs, and I'm shaking in my boots just thinking about game one with Elvis Merzlikins staring down Austin Matthews.
Yeah, I think it's a perfect example of don't judge a book by its cover, right? And Columbus is not going to play that high fly type of style, but I think Toronto's going to see a lot of Nick Foligno in that series. They're going to see a lot of Zach Werenski, a lot of Seth Jones, and I'll just say, like, if Corpusalo gets any confidence, Toronto could be in trouble, certainly. But I think you look from a matchup aspect, Toronto's got the advantage right up the middle, at least. Pierre-Luc Dubois, this guy's played in the league a couple years. He's going to be, tasked with playing John Tavares, with playing Austin Matthews routinely, William Nylander. But, I mean, if there's one coach you can find a way to bottle up an offense, it's probably John Tortorella, right? Look what he did last year against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who are one of the most prolific scoring teams in the league, right? So I think you guys are exactly right. And it's difficult for me to say since I work and cover the team, but I think it's fair. And especially the time off, and especially the way the Maple Leafs, they lacked a bit of that fire that you would have liked to see from a team who had all that talent. So they're another prime example of a team. Will they put it all together in time for this season?
And the thought that comes to my mind first about each of these teams, like the Jackets play for the team and the logo,
yeah,
and the
exactly.
name on the front yeah. of the jersey, and the other guys in Toronto always seem to, you know, be individuals. So who would win that battle? To me, it's Columbus.
One thing I do want to say before my closing remark here, Mitch Marner, Selke candidate, look at this guy's number. He led the whole Maple Leafs in shorthanded time on ice this season. Did anyone here know that? I don't think so. Maybe Nick, because you watch every Leafs home game. But Mitch Marner is a darn good two-way player, really underrated. And I think that's a player that could single-handedly win a playoff series. It's not going to be Tavares. It's not going to be Matthews. It's going to be number 16. And then the last thing I want to say is, now that this has been announced, now that the news is out there, stuff will filter in the next couple of weeks about Dougie Hamilton, about guys that have been on the shelf. How are they feeling? How's their injury holding up? Are they 100%? How's Tarasenko's shoulder? And at that point, I think that's when you can start to open up your wallet and say, hey, I do feel a little bit better about the St. Louis Blues. Hey, I do feel a little bit better about taking, you know, the Washington Capitals after that long time. Whatever it is, I think, you know, this is a good preliminary thoughts kind of episode, boys. But I think in the next week, 2 weeks, when we get more news, we're going to have our opinions dialed in.
No doubt, Robbie. And I think it goes the other way, too, with the injuries. As guys are coming back and these teams are starting to train again, like, you're going to find out injury news on the flip side and negative things that will, you know, go into the back of your mind before you make those final decisions.
Round robin for seeding. I'm really, really curious. I think our perspective is these teams aren't going to play hard, or it's going to be, you know, why play the star players? We'll see how that shakes out. I don't know. It might be different. They might come out really hard to play those games. I'm not sure. I don't know what to expect from the round robin perspective.
Yeah, those don't mean as much, right? And I get also, like, I hate to go back to last year, but what happened last year, I just throws everything out the window, right? And just get in and you never know, right? So, again, as I brought up earlier, the Boston Bruins are a team that's probably not too happy about that. But all in all, I honestly feel like the NHL did a really good job in sort of a difficult predicament to be in, certainly in unforeseen times and uncharted territory. To put this thing together was rather extensive. So, I'm fired up, guys. I know this is far out. And again, I think the key word to bring up here is plan, right? We don't know what's going to happen over the next couple months, but I'm at least fired up to look at these series and get ready for potential playoff hockey here.
Yeah, and I think it's important, too, that the league is taking all those paramount precautions from every different facet of the return to play, return to practice thing. Even their hub cities, they haven't announced them yet because all the ups and downs around the country, hopefully things are on the improvement everywhere. But if you name a hub city and then something happens there, then you're thrown into a frenzy. Now you have some options. You can go with the best options when the timing is most appropriate.
By the way, I'm on board for like an all-day thing, an all-day affair, right? Start the games at 10 a.m. and go all the way to late at night. I think that'd be tremendous for viewership. I think at this point in time, I think it's a perfect time for the NHL to just see what you can do, right? Throw something on the wall and see if it sticks, right? And, you know, it'll be fascinating to see how it all unfolds over the next couple of months. But I just think in general, we should just be really fired up of what's happening here.
Yeah, definitely grateful for everybody's commitment to make this work. And I think that, you know, it's almost like we're going to have the crazy first round of the playoffs, and then we're going to have another first round right after it. So how cool is that going to be if everything goes according to plan from a viewership standpoint and all those types of things that can grow the game of hockey during this time?
Well, the key is in the ignition. I've already turned it. My motor's running. I'm looking at Stanley Cup odds. I'm waiting for those series odds. I'm keeping an eye on the players, the health, the reaction. We got a plan in place. The one thing I'll say is this. The real first round, after the qualifying round, I would really like those series to be seven games. Hopefully, we'll be in a position to do that. If not, fine, we'll go five. But I'm hoping after that qualifying round that the series are seven games. I hope that we're able to do that. And fellas, Robbie, Nick, Pete, thanks for jumping on. Appreciate it. And all the listeners, thanks for sticking with us. What do you got to say, Nicky? I see you're ready to go.
Yeah, not much. Follow me on Twitter at the Golden Muzzy. And for anybody who can figure out the draft lottery situation for me, you can tweet me or email me, please, because that was like grade 9 calculus. It was really, really confusing. But I'm sure they figured it out, right?
Appreciate you joining us, Nick. And Nick does great work at Sportsnet. And again, follow him on Twitter, follow him on all the platforms, and stick with us as we move closer to this return to play plan. We're going to have episodes for playoff rankings, playoff pool previews, sleepers and X factors, and even maybe playoff pool mock draft, depending on how much time we have between now and then. But so much time to work with, so much time to build the excitement towards the Stanley Cup playoffs. So for Nick Alberga, Robbie Reese, Bob Bender, Pete Jensen, thanks for listening to NHL Fantasy on Ice. We'll talk to you next time.